basketball, a game of giants. And there's number 99, George Mikan, one of the greatest.
Perhaps the most complete player the game has ever seen. The Lakers captain, Elgin Baylor.
2 seconds, 1 second. West throws it up.
Jerry West made it from the other side of the mid-court stripe.
Ford sends it to Kareem. Sky hook up and good. Lakers win.
Magic down the middle, just what I thought. A hook shot at 12. Good!
Shaquille fade away.
Bryant for the win. Bang! James puts up the three. Oh, it's good.
Doncic on the drive. Step back. Puts it up. Puts it in. 5 tenths of a second remaining.
What's up, Laker fans? You're listening to the Laker Film Room Podcast. I'm Pete, joined by Darius, and today we wake up to stunning news. For the second time in 14 months, the Lakers have been sold, this time to Josh Kushner and Bob Iger for a new record, at least amongst North American professional sports teams, $12.5 billion, 14 months after Mark Walter bought the team. When Walter bought the team after 40 years of Buss family stewardship, it felt like a natural transition, at least. If the team was going to get sold, how could it be better than to a guy with some deep pockets and a connection to Los Angeles that was already running a championship-winning organization in the LA Dodgers? And you could see sort of the, okay, I can see how this can work. He was already a minority owner in the Lakers. This time, especially with the parties involved, much murkier waters. What is your reaction to the news?
Unbelievable news to wake up to. You sent me the text because I hadn't even really been online yet. Your new East Coast hours are allowing you to get the jump on me, Pete, in all of these ways. So I'm sitting here cutting fruit for my daughter to go to school as part of her snack. And then all I see is an all caps text from you. And then I'm in scramble mode at that point. And it's just an unreal development. To your point about the natural transition that the Lakers were essentially being passed off to one of the minority owners who already owned the other crown jewel franchise of the city made complete and total sense. And now the ownership duo of Kushner and Iger, the young venture capitalist and the old business lion, essentially, in Iger, it's an interesting duo as an ownership group, but it's a total outsider perspective. Now, Magic Johnson is on Twitter basically saying, you couldn't have a better group of new guys. I've known Iger forever, and Iger is an industry person within city. He ran Disney for years, famously during a long stretch where they were the media or one of the media behemoths, and their acquisition of Fox and Marvel happened under Iger stewardship. And so Magic is obviously going to say what he has to say, but instantly, Pete, my mind went to about a billion different questions that I had. The timing of this is fraught with more questions about what's going on with Mark Walter. We haven't really talked about this on the pod much at all, but he's been embroiled in some controversy lately based off of FCC investigations and what's going on with his money. And then there was reports of a health scare thing that happened a couple of years ago with a reported stroke. And so Walter's come under fire, and that's not something that we discussed on the pod. And so it's curious timing for the sale, you know, 14 months, 15 months after the original announcement, and less than 12 months from the ratification of when the Board of Governors actually approved the sale and he took full control of the team in terms of his full stake. It's crazy, honestly. And questions about why he's doing it now, I don't know if those will ever truly be uncovered. And then there's the Iger Kushner piece about their history of trying to get in from an expansion side and that seemingly not going the way that they would have wanted, to pivoting to paying off of a $12.5 billion valuation over $10 billion, it seems, or $10 billion for Walter's 80% stake or whatever. What's going to happen with Jeannie Buss and the arrangement that was built into the original sale with Mark Walter about her governorship? There was all of this turnover in staff. We went over it some a few months ago, Pete, but all of the layoffs that happened from within the organization and Lon Rosen taking over, all of this stuff that has happened in order to sort of dodgerfy the Lakers, right, and bring them under one massive umbrella of sports oligarchy, essentially, within the city, is now totally thrown into limbo for me. And I'm sitting here reacting without a lot of information or news, but it's stunning, honestly. It's just stunning to me.
It really is. And yeah, I want to emphasize that we are just as sort of thrown for a loop as anyone. This is us working through it rather than having some fully fleshed out thoughts on it. And to your point about what's going on with Walter and his investigation, it certainly makes you wonder, like, how relevant is that to this sale, especially considering who he sold it to? Josh Kushner is the younger brother of Jared Kushner and the son of Charles Kushner, who's less famous at this point than Jared Kushner was, but Charles Kushner is a convicted felon and the ambassador of France right now because he was pardoned by Donald Trump and fraud. And look up Charles Kushner's Wikipedia page, and that's a fun one. It makes you wonder, especially after watching Mark Walter tap dance at the White House recently, as the Dodgers, at least part of them, went to visit there. I do certainly wonder, let me put it this way, I will not be surprised if somehow Mark Walter is pardoned or the investigation goes away and that's not formally part of the deal, but man, be careful what you wish for. The other day, we were talking about Adam Silver's NBA and the people that they're letting into. And now, mind you, Kushner and all them have been minority owners for other teams, like you laid out. But the whole thought that we closed on was like, look, if you don't have some sort of rule of law and respect for rules, what actually happens is it becomes a time of warlords. And American warlords are not wear the military outfit and all of that. We've always conducted our war with our checkbooks, right? And I'm having a hard time with this, frankly. And what I said to close the pod was it becomes this sort of like, who's better at getting around the rules or skirting all of that? And you're talking about this is a family that's married into the most powerful family in the country. Look up the stuff that's going on with Gianni Infantino, who's the head of FIFA, and all of the stuff involving Josh Kushner and all of that, man. And I don't know. I'm having a hard time with this one, D. I hope they're able to run the team well and that the Lakers benefit from all of that, but we're not in Kansas anymore. We don't have the family that had been running for 40 years, and now, I don't know, we're in some different waters for sure.
Let's take an early break here, Pete, and when we come back, I want to linger on this point for a little bit longer. Offline, you and I were talking the other day about the Walter stuff and how we were initially so excited for all the reasons that we laid out, and you can go and listen to our podcast about the general disillusionment. Might be too strong of a term, but it's in the ballpark of what had happened under leadership in the last several years. And I know some of this was informed by your working at the team and just sort of what the future of the organization was going to be as the Buss family continued to age. You talk about warlords. There were warring factions within the organization and what was going on with the siblings and then Rob Pelinka and Jeannie and everyone sort of like, these are the untold stories that are sort of bubbling right underneath the surface of what was going on. And you and I were both very eager to sort of wash our hands of that.
Yeah, and I don't want that either, right? I'm not like, oh, if only we had that back. I don't want that, but sometimes...
No, 100%. So when you were saying, be careful what you wish for a little bit earlier, my initial thought was, be careful what you wish for in the transition from the Buss family to Walter. Because we were very excited about the prospect of Walter and his group and the brain trust that created the monster that are the Dodgers, to infiltrate the Lakers and put their tentacles all over this organization and spread out and be like, how can they essentially return them into one of the dominant forces within the league, right? And it's interesting to say it that way because the Lakers have won a championship in the last 6 years. And for as poorly run as they've been, for argument's sake, they are still one of the crown jewel franchises of the league. And that's proof positive by what they've been settling for, right? The last two sales. And getting back to the point I was making, you and I were talking some offline the other day, and I was sort of just like, man, I didn't enjoy seeing Mark Walter at the White House essentially doing his song and dance the way that he was. And we don't want to turn this pod necessarily into this big political discussion, but that's just not where my values align, essentially. And anyone who's spoken to me knows what this actually is for me. And so it did bother me, and it does bother me when it's so outwardly like that. And to your point about the transition now to Kushner, who obviously has the family ties that he has, and Bob Iger, who I know much less about, but way more about his obvious business acumen in terms of how high he climbed and the roles that he's had within the business world. And it brings me back to the point that you were hinting at or making outright earlier, which is all of these people have their foibles, and you don't get to the level of being this big of a player in any industry without having stepped on necks and done all of this stuff that is required to gain that sort of status within those parts of the world. And it's super interesting to me as we sort of talk through this discussion as to how fans relate to ownership groups and how what we want to achieve from the perspective of fans, and how we sort of bite down on the leather on these other aspects of our personalities and things that matter to us as we reconcile these two sides of our brain, if that makes sense. Because as Lakers fans, I want the richest, most keen, shrewd, smart, willing to spend money people imaginable to run the organization in a way where they're going to pull out all of the stops within the rules of the league. So, sorry, Steve Ballmer, within the rules of the league to win, right? But the flip side is those people are often the same people who are willing to take all of those same measures in other parts of their lives that I would probably disagree with in so many other ways.
That's the thing, the whole within the rules of the league thing. This is the point that I was making the other day, and why today's news, I was like, be careful what you wish for, because my point was that if the rules of the league don't actually exist in any meaningful way, I don't want my team to play by those rules anyway. I don't want the Clippers to have a different salary cap than the Lakers have. If you're able to do these side deals for players where you're able to re-sign other guys and do all of that because you've created extra room for yourself, I want the Lakers to be able to do that too. I don't want the Lakers to be operating at a deficit relative to the rest of the league. But that, again, was to my point the other day, and I don't want to turn this into a political pod, but this is important, is like, how much do rules matter? How much do we respect or care about the rule of law? This is something that's a historical, you look at human beings throughout the last 5,000 years, and it's gone back and forth from these rules don't matter that much, they're dumb, then the fallout from that, and then we go, it's actually really important that we have rules and that are followed and agreed upon by everybody, because then things go to shit if not. But if we're in one of those times, which happens over and over again throughout history, where it's like, they're suggestions but not really rules, I don't really want that either. But what kind of people do you end up with when you're getting people that are good at exploiting that? And so that's why I was like, be careful what you wish for.
Well, it's interesting, Pete, because the empowering of people often comes with all of these trade-offs, right? I want to scale this down more towards what I experience in my everyday life, because these broader, sort of bigger ideas can feel very real, but less impacting on my personal everyday life than what the grand ideas that we talk about, right? Like, we want things to follow a certain path, but that doesn't always impact your day-to-day that way. You know
what
I mean?
This is why the vast majority of people don't really care that much about politics, is because the impact on your day-to-day life is so abstract that it's like, I got to pay my bills, I got to do all this other stuff, that it's easy to just not be that engaged with it.
So in my experience with leadership, the things that I've always wanted are for them to be protective of the people who they are both responsible for, and then in turn, who we are responsible to, right? I always say that my job is in service of not my boss, but my boss's boss and my boss's boss's boss. It allows me to be very mission focused within the larger vision of what my organization is. And I believe in that mission. And so even if my job is way lower on the pay grade scale or way lower within the hierarchy of the organization, I can very easily make the connections between my work and my boss's work and my boss's boss's work and all the way up, because I see the through line based off of the organizational mission and ethos and belief system that we have at my place of work. Not every place is going to have that, but I do think the best places do. And so in bringing this back to the Lakers, and there's this whole arm of the argument that we were just having in terms of a discussion of powerful people within the construct of the way that the world works, and how as sports fans, we have to both acknowledge and understand that these things come with costs, right? That none of these people are billionaires by accident. And in order to become a billionaire, you're very likely operating in parts of the world where this is coming at the expense of all kinds of other people, including working class people and poor people around the world and all of these other factors that matter to me as a citizen of not only this country, but of the planet, and wanting to make sure that everyone has a certain pathway, right? The other side of this is the pure lizard brain sports fan side of me, which I talked about earlier. But even that aspect, Pete, comes with the idea of, no, you're actually a leader within an organization that has real people and costs to it. And this goes back to the stuff we were talking about earlier with the layoffs and everything that's happened during the transition of the Walter organization, right? And we know that not only were there the very public layoffs that happened and sort of this rejiggering of the business operations, but that comes with a shift in mentality and environment and how the people who actually are still there and who do work there, how they feel on a day-to-day basis. And one of the thoughts that I had with this transition was, what's going to happen to all of those people who work there now, who basically, over the last 15 months, have been part of a transition that was shifting the course of the organization towards the ethos and values of what Mark Walter and the people who he installed were going to deliver. And now, Pete, it's going to change again. And so I want to refocus our conversation a little bit to the human side of some people that we actually know. Right? This is very personal to us beyond the fact that we root for the team. It's because we know some of the individuals who are going to now have to deal with more change. And let's go to break here, and I want to talk about that a little bit.
Those people, as we've seen throughout history, are often just collateral damage to the whims of what a Mark Walter, what Kushner and Iger will want, right? And that's their right, right? If you're employed at a certain place. But in terms of the functional abilities of the Lakers, to drill it down to that, they've been in the middle of this process of, there are several people who work there now who work for both the Dodgers and the Lakers. What happens to them? Do they still continue to do that? Is the Dodgerification of the Lakers over? Do they have to unwind to that? It seems like they were right in the middle of making all of these changes, and we've seen many changes over the course of the summer. I do wonder if this is part of the reason why there hasn't been a hiring for an assistant GM, that sort of there was a pause after a certain point of adding new people. And we'll get more details of how the sale came together and all of that. But that's one thing that I don't think this is good news for the Lakers, at least in the short term, just because a new owner is going to come in and implement a new vision once again. And that's going to take time, even if it's done well. And so I feel for the people that you're talking about, D, about what's going to happen to all of them. I think that they're kind of pawns in a bigger game. And I hope that they're able to keep their jobs and that they're happy and all that. But I'm not holding my breath for any of that. But even beyond that point, the Lakers are restarting a process that they just started not that long ago.
Well, it's interesting because several new people have been hired and put into very important positions within the organization. And to your point, almost every huge leadership change requires a self-inspection of what you have in place and whether or not you want to keep those people. And in the last 12 to 15 months, that examination essentially happened, and a bunch of people were forced out, right? Or sort of cajoled to leave, or were outright just fired, right? Some were replaced, others weren't. And the ones that weren't were part of essentially a reorganization that was going to emphasize certain aspects of what was going to now be important under the new ownership group and other things that were going to be less valued. And so we're not replacing those functions within the organization. And that was always going to be a little bit messy. And when you come out of the other side of that, and this comes with any like organizational change and change management stuff that I've dealt with in my personal and professional life, is what ultimately happens is you come out of the other side of that with a better understanding of what is important to this new leadership group. And then you build from the bottom up again as to how things are going to function on a day-to-day basis. And to go through two of those cycles in essentially a two-year process is very difficult for the people internally that have to deal with change management. There's a whole wing of thought around change management that is studied essentially and implemented. There's a whole profession built off of people who are hired as consultants to implement change. And it's because change is hard and people do not stick to it.
And it's super high stakes, right? Depending on how well you do it can impact the bottom line, the effectiveness of everybody. So yeah, of course there's a whole industry dedicated to it because there's a whole wide range of outcomes that are resting on how well you do it.
So again, my mind goes back to the people who are there. My mind actually goes to some of the people who were let go, right? Because some of those people were let go, Pete, in the vision of Mark Walter's organization, and we want to run things a certain way. And now, whenever this gets approved, this sale, it's going to come down to the idea again of, well, what do the new people want? And maybe those new people would have wanted some of those old people to stay. And you have no idea because those people are gone already. And so the reshuffling of the deck in this way is just very tricky. I also wonder, though, too, is will some of those people who remain maybe feel relief if some of the people who were installed to run the show weren't actually as good as we would have wanted them to be, or didn't have the approach or personality or like whatever. Like, I always say that one of the main things that will make you happy at work is not what work you actually do. None of us make enough money necessarily to be like, oh, what really matters to me is my love of the game. It's like the people you have to work with on a day-to-day basis who can effectively drive your happiness upward or downward. I don't know about you, Pete, but I've had some great bosses in my life. And even if I didn't like my day-to-day work as much, I enjoyed going to work because the fact is I felt protected and insulated and felt in unison and in lockstep with the people who I had to report to. And other times I might have liked my work more, but the people were bad and I'm just like, get me out of here.
I experienced this at the Lakers. I went from having an absolute blast working there from being given a choice of, okay, you can either stay with the pod or you can work for Lauren Lampkin. And I'm like, I don't want to work for Lauren Lampkin. I see where this is going. I don't want to do this. So yeah, that makes a huge difference. And so yeah, we'll see how, but the devil you don't know is not always better than the devil you do.
It's true, but sometimes you might be willing to take on the unknown if the devil you do know is sort of just like, no, you're actually a devil. I've identified you. You know what I mean?
Sure. So, I'll take my chances that, yeah, maybe the next one won't be as bad. Yeah.
Right. And so as we talk through this, Pete, this is, again, and maybe this is like my optimist brain turning things on again, or I've been in too many change management classes where I think about this stuff a certain way. But I do see stuff like this as an opportunity. Just like I talked about with like the Walter sale. And I think I was better positioned to be optimistic about the Walter sale based off of all of the factors that we've discussed both in this pod and at the time that the sale happened. And I'm much more touch and go with this one. That said, I do see this as an opportunity, again, to be like, okay, well, what direction can the team go, and can it go in the direction that we want? And I'm going to hold off judgment on that aspect of things for now as I learn more about what the vision of this group is going to be. The statement that was put out was generic, but the sort of industry, I've been in LA and I have wanted to be an NBA person for a while, like that I think Iger put out. Again, it's generic, but at least it's encouraging in a way where I'm just like, okay, I get it. We'll have so many more discussions about this, Pete, but like the how deep are their pockets? They just paid an extraordinary amount of money for this franchise, and putting that much money on the table can sometimes be tricky. Like, are you going to follow through on that investment, or are you going to basically start to penny pinch or whatever?
We just talked about this on the pod on Adam Silver's NBA the other day about the infiltration of private equity into ownership groups. One angle we haven't covered is like, he owned the team for 14 months and made a 25% return on his investment. And so that is going to be right near the top. It's part of the reason why these groups are coming in is being like, yeah, we'll buy this. We're going to make these decisions that are not always beneficial for the on-court product. And this is something you'll see Celtics fans, which I'm quite glad about, lamenting about their team now being owned by a private equity group, is that it'll increase the valuation of the franchise, but not necessarily improve the product on the court. But from a purely utilitarian standpoint, it's not good to have an owner that's under federal investigation by the Securities and Exchanges Commission and the Department of Justice. And it's probably better to have somebody who's married into the most powerful political family in the country instead, right? If you wanted to put morality and beliefs and all of that aside and just be like, hey, what's better for your team? I would imagine this is probably better for us.
Yeah, man, that got dark at the end there.
I'm sorry. If you can't tell, I'm coping pretty hard right now. So thank you all for putting up with me.
No. But this is a part of the sort of like uncovering of what can happen at the ownership level that is a bit of a reckoning and a reconciliation that I think us fans have to deal with. And it's a branch off of the same tree that the Tom Dundon branch exists on that's happening in Portland, right? Where he's being nicknamed El Cheapo and he's not spending the money and he's cutting costs in all of these ways and he's doing it brazenly. He's in an argument with the city about upgrading the Moda Center, which I can't even call it the Moda Center. It's just going to be the Rose Garden forever to me, right? And trying to pass those expenses off to the city and sort of threatening to like essentially leave Portland. And this is a Portland institution. Pete, could you imagine a new ownership group coming into Los Angeles and being like, oh yeah, the Lakers, maybe we'll move there. People would be riding in the streets. Now, obviously, it's a different situation there. The Lakers, no one would ever leave Los Angeles or whatever. But the point stands that fans are at the whim of, or the whims of these powerful people who buy these teams. And we're going through that right now because the Lakers were purchased by one powerful person, and less than a year and a half later, he flipped them. He flipped them for a massive profit, and he flipped them in an environment where the scrutiny that he was under is going to always make me question, like, okay, well, what really happened here with him? And we have so many more questions than we do answers, Pete. Like, we didn't even get to this part, but I remember just 5 or 6 months ago, the Lakers making this big announcement about the South Bay Lakers moving to the Coachella Valley.
Coachella Valley,
right?
Yeah.
In order to allow for the Lakers practice facility to no longer have to house the South Bay team, so that they could then convert that into a high level training and medical sort of space for player wellness and availability that was going to be available to both Lakers and Dodgers players. Tell me how that's going to work now that your team is no longer going to be owned by the guy who also owns the Dodgers, right?
That's what I'm saying. There's going to be a lot of stuff that has to be unwound. And to this point, one thing that I think is on fans' radar on in this is, does this make it more or less likely that, say, Rob Pelinka sticks around? And one thing that I've been arguing to people is that I think people have been in a level of denial of that Mark Walter and his people actually like Pelinka, and that even beyond just the, this is the guy that we inherited, he's gone and done talks with the Dodgers, and they actually have a positive opinion of him. I think there's less of a relationship there with Iger and Kushner. I don't know. I don't know who knows who, of course. And a lot of these people, their paths will cross in different ways. But I do think that it makes things a lot less certain for that as well. And so, yeah, a lot of this process that was already, whatever percentage you want to put on it, complete, is probably going to get unwound on some level for precisely the reason you're talking about.
And that just leads to more uncertainty. It leads to more questions. It leads to more instability. And that will impact the Lakers, Pete. And I think for all the positivity we felt with Walter, I think that the honeymoon was coming to an end with him, if not already over. And I think that in the next 6 months, regardless of how well the Lakers performed, there would have been more scrutiny on Walter from that aspect of things. And I'm interested to see how and if that changes with this new ownership group, obviously. The timing, though, is very interesting to me, and we will see how quickly this sale gets ratified by the Board of Governors, and then we will see what kind of more extensive statements we might get from the new ownership group, and then we will learn more about what their relationship with Jeannie Buss is like, what the belief in Rob Pelinka and everyone else is like. The Lakers just went through a dramatic change this offseason with LeBron James leaving and basically 80% of their roster turning over. They essentially didn't retain any of their own free agents except for Austin Reeves, and 75% of the team was free agents. And so they've gone over this massive shift in terms of player personnel, and over the previous 6 months, they'd gone under a massive shift of front office and sort of like a team leadership infrastructure administrative staff turnover. And now we're right back into a question of how real was any of that stuff, and is it going to change again? And so, Pete, lots more conversations to have about this. We woke up today to stunning news, and honestly, this news is going to reverberate through our daily lives for a long time, it feels like. The aftershocks are here, man.
Yeah, we've got some time to digest it, and we'll continue to talk about it after a little bit more time. But good to get a reaction pod in. Thank you for everyone who stuck around to listen to me cope. We will be back tomorrow, talk more Lakers, but until then, you've been listening to the Laker Film Room Podcast. We'll catch you guys next time.
Baines has got it in low to McHale. McHale wants to turn, he's double teamed. Just pass out of front, broken up by Worthy. Tip to Magic. Worthy dies on his belly. Magic scores.
There's Magic, got it. Magic fires. It's in. The Lakers win the game. The Lakers win the game. Rebound to Lottie. 3 seconds left. Van Exel for the winner. It's on the way.
Kobe Bryant, 48 points, 16 rebounds. Shaq with his eighth block shot that ties.
ties an NBA Finals record.
A lot of Laker fans sticking around for this.
You're seeing something that's very rare indeed. A Laker to get MVP chance
in Boston. Of all places.
Are you kidding me?
Kobe, hard to believe.
Are you kidding me? Unreal. Are you kidding me?
Lakers looking to push. Bryant spinning in the lane. Back for Gasol. Pretty pass. And it's back to a three-point game.
Kobe Bryant picked up by Bell.
There's the move.
Two.
One.
Miss it.
Bryant.
It's over.
Shot clock now to five. Bryant.
Yeah.
And that was a little tough to Alvin Gentry.
Add insult to injury, Kobe. I mean, what a shot. I mean, you can't defend that. Are you kidding me?
2.1 seconds remaining. Denver a foul to give. Jokic trying to disrupt Rondo. He puts it in. Here's Davis. 4-3 in the win. Oh, it's good. Anthony Davis has won it for the Lakers. James again. Oh, he hits another one. LeBron James putting together a closing quarter against the Nuggets.
This historic 2020 NBA championship belongs to the Los Angeles Lakers. The Lakers conquer the bubble, and banner number 17 will soon hang in the rafters.